Welcome back to Podcast Recovery, everyone. We're your hosts, David O.
And Carly R.
And today we're joined by our very special friend, RJ. How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on?
Not much, man. Where are you from, man?
I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
Like inner city Baltimore?
I guess like Rosedale, Parkville.
Oh, okay.
A couple different spots.
Yeah. All right. That's fair enough. When were you first introduced to recovery?
Ooh. I guess personally, I was first introduced to recovery when I was about 20 years old. Mm-hmm.
And how long have you been clean?
I've been clean 10 years.
10 years. Isn't it a trip, dude?
It is. Like, it's been crazy.
Like 6, 7, 8, 9 for me, I was just like, whatever.
Yeah.
But then 10 hit this past year.
And yep.
It was like, fuck.
Yeah, dude, those double digits just do something different.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. All right. And how long? 10 years. All right. Well, with all that out of the way, I'm going to turn it over to you to share your story with us. Take it away, man.
Sure, man. I just want to introduce myself as an addict. Mm-hmm. I also want to say RJ, you know, for me, I try to keep that in the forefront of my mind because like those are the things I have to remember on a daily basis because this is a disease that I fight on a daily basis. Oh, yeah. And this is a little bit different than what I'm used to as far as like, you know, being on this platform with the podcast and everything. But at the core of who I am an addict and I still want to identify as that even though I'm on this platform.
Is this your first podcast?
It is, dude.
Hey-o.
It is, man. So this is like super different. Like I'm not used to the feedback, you know, I'm used to sharing for 20 minutes and then you turn it over and
it's a lot cooler because you're not just sitting there where everybody's just staring at you in total silence.
You have to respond back and be like, you're just kind of sitting up there looking back at the person talking about you.
Oh,
isn't that weird? Does anyone else feel like that's weird? No.
No.
I mean, I hate the whole experience, so.
Hey.
Sharing is tough. It is tough, and it's not for everybody.
You always feel like you're doing a good job.
In the inner city Baltimore.
Share that shit.
Come on now.
Yeah. And you're like, fucking right. I said something.
There's no recovery like Baltimore recovery.
That's the hit. Oh,
Yeah. They'll get you fired up, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, like, I guess I'd start from like the beginning, man. I was born at an early age, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, and for me, like, I grew up in a really good household, mm-hmm. you know, like there was no like smoking gun that would say, hey, this kid is going to grow up to be an addict.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I battled with that. Like, that's where denial came in for a long time. And I really struggled with like, hey, I came from a great household. I had two loving parents. And even though there was like divorce in the story, mm-hmm. you know, like I was very happy when they decided to split because when they were together, there was so much fighting and all that kind of stuff. That when they split when I was like in fourth grade. So it really wasn't that detrimental to me.
Yeah.
And being able to have two parents that were in my life that loved me beyond measure.
Did you get two Christmases?
Dude, so I'm born on Christmas, right?
Shut the fuck up.
I swear to God. So this is crazy, man. So not only did I get two Christmases, I got two birthdays. Right. So I got like quadruple presents.
That's friggin' awesome.
Yeah. So normally you get like the shaft because like family's like, oh, this is birthday and Christmas.
Yeah, it's birthday and Christmas.
But my parents are like, no, we're not playing that. Like, we're going to get this kid, like, you know what I mean? He gets birthday and he gets Christmas. So,
awesome.
Yeah. So I did. I got like quadruple. So even like, you know, they sent me like this guidance counselor, right? And, you know, I'm in this counseling session and my parents come in and like, how's he doing? They're like, he doesn't need to be here. He's like counseling these other kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like there for these other kids because like I was just so happy that they weren't fighting anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like I got to enjoy the good side of both of my parents and I didn't get to see that bad side anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
It was actually Louis C.K. who said, no good relationship ends in divorce.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Divorce is like, it's always gotten this really terrible stigma. And like, it doesn't have to be that way. Like, clearly things aren't working and you guys going separate is probably the healthiest thing for both of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
As long as you go by it the right way.
Yeah. And one of the things like I've learned, you know, through growing up in this process is that like, I just lost my train of thought. Is that you don't stay married for the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's one of those common misconceptions that like, oh, we stay in this because of the kid. And at the end of the day, like that kid can feel the strain.
Oh,
you know, the tearing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, like I shared that because like even through that process, it didn't like push me into this dark depression to where like I wanted to get outside myself. Mm-hmm. The honesty of it is that, you know, when I got into middle school, I naturally wanted to get outside of myself. Yeah. I saw the older kids walking into the woods and I'm like, hey, I want to be a part of that crowd.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going into like the DARE program in elementary school and like you get the little sticker and the shirt and all that shit. And like, you know, I always in the back of my head, like, I wonder what that feels like though.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, that's bad. Your brain on drugs and scrambled eggs and all that. But then in the back of my mind, I'm like, but I wonder how that feels.
I got ratted out during the DARE program. This girl was like, David smoked cigarettes. And I was like, you little bitch. And I was like, for real? Why?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, that's a cop, dude. That's like, well, this isn't cool.
No, a lot of that marketing was also just like, it looked cooler to do drugs.
It did.
Like,
it
let's be fucking real. Like, what were you really trying to do? Like, I mean, the guy who's like sitting in a cubicle doing his job with glasses, like, it's like, be like Jim.
And it was such
and, like, John has like a chick playing billiards, like, on his
he's
arm.
He's
doing
drugs. Like, fucking billiards? Who are you? Who the fuck says billiards? Like, what? I'm just saying, it was half-assed education. Just say no. Why?
You're right. Right.
Like, they're skateboarding and looking cool as shit. Like,
I could really go down this billiard track.
You don't want this.
Yeah.
We're not going to.
Okay.
We're not going to.
Oh.
So he's in the DARE program.
Yeah. So, but, feel a part of. You know, and like you're talking about smoking cigarettes, dude. I mean, even in fifth grade, I was smoking cigarettes too. You know, like I just always had this natural curiosity to do the things that you weren't supposed to do.
And we grew up in the 90s where there were still cigarette ads on TV.
Yeah.
And it looked super cool.
Also, again, parents had, it was easy to get cigarettes.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, multiple
dude.
Parents had them.
What was your first cigarette?
Dude, I couldn't even tell you. It was out of an ashtray. We were stealing it from
gross.
My dude. We were stealing it from my friend's dad, man. I mean, like, we were just like, hey, what's this? You know what I mean? But even actually, now I'm thinking about it, even before I grew up in the, you said the 90s, like, it was the age of like Bach parties, dude.
Hell yeah.
Like, the whole neighborhood got together and it was a cookout out back, and you're taking swigs of the beer, you know, sneaking around and running and, you know, feeling that first buzz and all that. I mean, dude, like, it was just a different time. So like when I got into middle school and everything and I started getting introduced to like different drugs, it wasn't just alcohol. Now there's like marijuana involved. And like for me, it was easier to get that kind of stuff than it was to get alcohol. You had to know somebody that was 21. Yep. You had to steal it from your parents. You had to do something like that. Weed, like everybody had it, you know?
Exactly.
And from the first time I was introduced to weed in sixth grade, like I just wanted to feel that way for the rest of my life. It took me outside of myself in a way that like, I was like, okay, this is the missing piece. You know, like this is what I need to continue on, enjoying life. Because for me, like even as a young kid, like I never felt like I fit in 100%, you know? It didn't matter if I had to, like, I'm going to go way back here. If I had the BK ratchet straps, I don't know if anybody remembers the BK ratchet straps, right?
Yes. Dude, they
fuck yeah, dude. So
I never got them.
I mean, I did. So
for one of your four Christmas birthdays.
Yeah, I know, right? So like, it didn't matter like if I had that kind of stuff or what. Like, there was always just this missing ingredient. And like when I found drugs, I thought that was the missing ingredient. You know what I mean? It just took me outside myself in a way that when I was just like, yeah, fuck this. This is amazing. Like, this is how I want to be the rest of my life. But like, even through middle school and high school, like I could see the consequences of addiction, you know? And it wasn't necessarily in a form of like police or getting locked up or anything like that. It was like my inability to do schoolwork. It was like, my inability to just be like a functioning teenager, you know, like I look back at that stuff, sneaking into my mom's purse at like 14 years old, taking $20 so I can go hit the weed, man.
Yep.
You know, doing all that. And I'm like 14 years old. Like, you know, like that's not normal.
Nope.
So from a very early, you know, from very early on in my high school career, like I'm just like, college was never in the picture. You know what I mean? Schoolwork, like I just didn't want to be a part of it. I always wanted to be with the crowd that was like skipping school and doing all that kind of stuff. So that's what I did, man. And it wasn't until like I graduated from high school, that I got introduced to even harder drugs, you know? And like
the addiction has to graduate too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, when I was in high school, dude, like I was taking kids Adderall, you know what I mean? This kid was like, I don't like the way this makes me feel. I was like, I love the way this makes me feel. So like, give me more of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were doing things like that. And then really, I guess kind of like if I had to like pick one thing that kind of catapulted my addiction to the next level was getting out of a really bad relationship. Oh, yeah. You know, it was that first heartbreak, dude, that gut wrenching, sob crying, fetal position. I'm never going to be okay again. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep.
She was the one.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're both in active addiction. It's absolutely toxic, but you know, like that's just what I thought like a good relationship was supposed to be.
Have you ever gotten heartbroken like that? You seem like the one that was doing the breaking up first.
You've never been crushed?
No. I haven't.
Oh, man.
I have not.
Oh, God, it sucked.
I'm like, I always just jealous, got to the point where like, I was like over it, and then I would just move on.
I feel like that's like a normal thing. Like
I guess.
Like, this is kind of boring now. I'm done.
I think she's the outlier here. Don't feel weird. She's the weird one.
I am.
You're the weird one, Carly.
But I agree. Like, I wish I had that. I wish that was my story. Like, I was super attached to, like, everything.
Well, the thing was is that I was the one that would leave before somebody could leave me. So okay. It wasn't
like an abandonment thing. Yeah.
You're a savage. God, I love you.
Yeah. All right. I get it. Some good will haunting shit, right? So like I went through that and like I had no coping mechanisms. I had no skills to get through something like that, dude. And like the only skill at the time was like turning to a substance to make me feel better.
Why don't they teach that instead of dare?
Teach me how
to get my heart broken.
Yeah. Teach me how to like health deal with my feelings in a healthy manner, you know? And
that's exactly what I do for a living.
Yeah.
That's amazing. To kids?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. We need more people like you in this world.
That's exactly what I do. It's exhausting.
I can imagine. Sure. I mean, you throw emotions in the kids, they're already high energy anyway, and you're like, you need to deal with this in a healthy way.
Yeah. And she's middle school, so that's
oh,
just...
Oh, my God. Are you like a guidance counselor?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So, you know, so like when that happened to me, I was like looking to fill this void, right?
Oh, yeah.
And when opportunity meets desire, which it did... Cocaine was introduced into the situation.
That's a title, Eric. Opportunity meets desire. Boom.
and dude, like I didn't say no. Like it was right there. Yep. And I'm like, absolutely. Like, let's get this on. And then like from the first time I did that first bump, it was just chasing like crazy, dude. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, I went out of high school right into working for my dad. I was making more money than I should have been at my age. I mean, I had no... You know, I didn't have emotional skills. I didn't have financial skills.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, I was working so much overtime and just getting all this money. And I was just like, all right, well, all my money is going to go towards drugs now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So like, I started doing that, man. And, like, dude, that took me to some bad places. Oh, you know what I mean? I'm a small dude as it is. But back then, I weighed under 100 pounds.
You're not built for less than 100.
Oh, wait, dude.
How?
What do you mean?
You weighed under 100 pounds?
Dude, it was terrible. It was terrible. I'll have to get some pictures together for you when I was... Like, I'm built now, but, like, before, like, I'll show you some pictures. I got some.
That's fucking wild, dude.
Yeah,
My lowest, like, weight, I think, was, like, 115.
It might have been like, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it might have been something like that.
Under 100, it's like, yo...
Yeah.
Dude, I was like holding my pants up with zip ties. Like I couldn't afford a belt, so I was stealing zip ties from work and like zip tying my pants together.
You could just use your shoestrings, dude. You know, why waste some of my own zip ties, right?
Like, well, they're my zip ties. And then, you know, even with like all that money I was making and everything, like I still couldn't afford my habits. And now I'm stealing shit from work to like start affording this. Mm-hmm. I had these dark circles underneath my eyes. You know, through getting clean and being in recovery, like, dude, I've had 9 root canals. I have a bunch of fake teeth. Wow. I mean, teeth were just falling out of my face. I mean, it got really bad. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, my parents wanted to have like this intervention.
Of course.
You know, and they've been divorced for a long time at this point. So I show up to my mom's house and my dad's truck's out front. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Like, I know something's going on. And, you know, as addicts, dude, we're master manipulators trained in the art of deception, right? Mm-hmm. So I already knew before walking in there that like, I have to have something made up in my head. I have to have an exit strategy. I have to know how to get out of this because at the end of the day, like, I don't want to stop using, you know? So, you know, I'm this innocent, cute little kid. At that point, I was a little grudge ball, but you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
To my parents, I'm still their, like, cute little baby. And, like, I use that. You know, I manipulate with that. And I told them exactly what they wanted to hear. Like, I'll never do this again. I turned the waterworks on, you know? And, like, my mom, I love my mom, but she's definitely like the iron fist, right? Like she's like,
I thought you were going to go the enabler route.
No, my dad's the enabler, right? Mm. So my mom is like, I'm not having this. But I start seeing my dad as I'm talking. He's like feeding more and more into it. I'm like, okay, I'm playing off of him. Like, yeah. He's the one in my corner right now.
Yeah.
And sure enough, dude, I walked out of there and didn't have any consequences. Mm. You know, like they told me what they wanted to tell me and everything. And I made a promise to my parents that I would never do cocaine again. Mm-hmm. Right, that was the promise.
Yeah.
And the crazy part is like I kept that promise, but substitution is a bitch, dude. Yep. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't long until I found something else.
Mm-hmm.
And what I stumbled into was opiates.
Yep.
And opiates, man, that was a different animal altogether.
Yep.
You know, like that grabbed me like by my soul and had a hold of me that like going to sleep, I needed them. Waking up, I needed them. Eating, I mean, anything and everything that I did. Vacations, my life was reduced down to a 5-mile radius of my house and work because that's where all my connects were, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, like I had never felt something like that, like take over me, but at the same, like, you know, like in a negative way, but at the same time, like there was also this huge positive side to it as well. And I don't mean like it helped me in any way, mm-hmm. but it made me feel like it helped me.
Yeah.
So like the way that I explain it for me, like when I take opiates, man, it's like this warm blanket gets pulled over me.
Yep.
You know, even with cocaine and everything, like I realize now I hated doing it. But for whatever reason, I couldn't stop doing it. You know, I was like using it against my will.
Yeah.
And for me, like
opiate. I know Carly and I are in a different boat. I loved cocaine. Mm-hmm. I fucking loved
it. Did you do it while drinking though?
Oh, hell mm-hmm. yeah.
So I didn't learn about that until the end.
He told me that in recovery. You know, they mix together in your blood.
Cocomethylene.
And dude, they create a free drug.
Yeah.
You get a third drug. Everybody out
there's
here.
There's actually a lot of drugs.
We are not romanticizing anything. Don't do drugs.
Yeah.
But that was fucking crazy. Yeah. Alcohol and cocaine mix in your bloodstream to make a new drug.
So I never knew about that. I was like literally just like a cokehead. Like that's all I did.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. Like
there's also this thing called a speedball. It's great.
Don't stop.
It is not great. It is not great.
That's how you die.
It's absolutely terrible. This is a recovery podcast.
We're gonna edit that. Jeez. Son of a bitch.
The reason you're like the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
Somebody take his mic away.
Yeah. It's his mic. It's his mic. Fuck.
Yeah, so like when I found these opiates, man, like I loved every single thing about them, you know, mm-hmm. and like, you know, just as marijuana was when I was younger, now opiates were that marijuana, you know what I mean? Like this is the way I was going to be for the rest of my life.
Was there a point where you said you love drugs more than you loved people?
Of course, dude. People didn't, you know, drugs didn't talk back. People did.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It wasn't until, you know.
That's why animals are better than people too.
I agree.
Love some animals. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like, fuck those people, man. Like, you know.
But like looking back on that now, it's like, that is such a sad state of mind.
Oh, of course, dude.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely not like a healthy thing, but addiction is.
Animals are definitely better than people. What do you mean?
Hell yeah.
That's healthy.
That's healthy. Okay, we'll give you that one. You get that one. Redemption.
Yeah, so, you know, but. I did things for opiates that like I never thought I would do. You know what I mean? Like the nevers we talk about coming into recovery, like slowly started getting just chipped off the list. And, you know, when I finally hit my bottom, it was, January 18th of 2010. And this is not my clean date, by the way, but it was January 18th of 2010. And I had a whole bunch of drugs and like I wanted to overdose myself. You know, I had gotten to this point in my life to where like, I just thought the world would be better off without me. You know, like I was a shell of a human being. My dad couldn't look me in the eyes. My mom like had taken her key. Like I had finally gotten some external consequences for my addiction and everything. And like, I just didn't want to be around anymore. And I remember sitting there that night, you know, the night before and contemplating, how am I going to kill myself?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I was like, well, I can't like hang myself off the back deck because I'm like advertising to the neighbors that, you know, the neighbor's cages. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a bit too much.
Oh, I know. But like, this is like what's going through my head. I mean, this is like truly where I was at the time. And then I was like, well, maybe I could like sit in a bathtub and do the whole wrist thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, I can't have my dad like walking in, you know, to like carry or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I like, I don't mean to laugh about it, but it just like, I just remember being so dark, you know? And then finally, like I came up with the idea that like, I was just going to overdose myself.
Yeah.
And I went through with it and I tried to do it and it didn't work. For whatever reason, it didn't work. I came to the next day And when I came to, I remember feeling so empty.
Oh, you know?
It was like this thing of like, I can't even kill myself, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't even know how you get lower than that.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know, man. Like, at this point, my mom had gotten into recovery as well. Okay. So she was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And through my whole life, like, I remember her being a high functioning alcoholic.
Yeah.
So even though she was drinking a bottle of wine a night, waking up drinking gin and juice and doing all that stuff,
laid back.
Yeah. Oh, dude, she loves some gin and grapefruit juice. Like, when I think about my mom drinking, that's what I remember. And
that was a fantastic Snoop Dogg reference for everybody out there.
Underrated. And you know, so she but she went to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
She maintained a household. Mm-hmm. She maintained this social interaction that made it look like everything was okay. And that's what we talk about in the program, that social acceptability does not equal recovery.
Yep.
Because like on the outside everything looked good, but like, dude, it was bad, you know.
Oh yeah.
And I even remember like going to see her when she went on her 30-day Florida trip. She's like, oh, I'm going down to Florida for a little while, I'll be back.
Yeah.
Really, it was the rehab down the street, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So and I get a call from my aunt, like, hey, you need to go visit your mom. And I remember showing up there, and like, I'm in the throes of active addiction myself, right?
Yep.
And like, here I am trying to support my mom. And like, I remember walking in and like seeing her like, dude, like eating scrambled eggs with her fingertips because she had DT so bad.
Oof.
Trying to like, you know, drink out of a glass of water, and it was like spilling everywhere.
Alcohol's
she was,
fucked.
Oh, man. Dude, it's terrible.
It's fucking terrible.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, I share that story because that's who I called.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's who my higher power placed in my life at that time to say, okay, you know, to reach out to this person. They've been there. And I reached out to my mom and told her everything and decided to go into a treatment center.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, this was on a Friday. The treatment center wasn't open during the weekend, so I had to make it through this whole – it was an outpatient program.
Okay, it was outpatient.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
Like, what?
Yep, it was an outpatient program, and I had to make it through this whole weekend with not having anything, dude.
That's the worst time for an outpatient program to be closed.
Oh, dude,
or to be closed on weekends. Why does that make sense?
It was terrible.
You should just be open on weekends and closed during the week. I don't know. Fucking stupid.
And it gets better, dude. So,
yeah.
So, like, you know, they're closed for the weekend. So, like, I go to the hospital and I get this little, you know, doctor and she's foreign and I can't understand her and she can't really understand me. And I'm trying to tell her like everything that I'm doing. And she's like, there's no way you're taking this much. There's no way. And I'm like, I promise you I am.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not lying about my use. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying to get clean. You know what I mean? And she was like, well, we don't give Suboxone here. So, you know, Suboxone for you. And I'm like, we're in a hospital. You guys give everything.
Yeah.
Like, it is. But she wouldn't give me Suboxone. I think she hated addicts. Yeah, I think like we're in Baltimore, you know, we show up to a Baltimore hospital talking about opiate dependence. And she's probably like, fuck this kid.
You know? Yep.
I was 20 at the time. You know, like, fuck this. Let him have some pain. He ain't going to die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He'll be okay. But what she did give me was clonidine patches.
What the fuck?
I didn't know they had patches of clonidine.
Oh, they do. I promise you, they do.
Huh.
I don't even know.
So. I don't know about you guys, but I confuse Klonidine with Klonopin, right?
Yeah, I know
they are very different, though.
Yeah.
They
100% different.
Very different.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm sitting there on Saturday after being in this hospital with this patch on my arm. I'm like, this sucks, dude. This is nothing like Klonopin. Like, you know, I think because it's a patch.
It's not Klonopin.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So you thought it was Klonopin?
Dude, yeah, I'm 20 years old, man. It sounded the same. You know, I didn't know it was a blood pressure medicine. So, dude, I ripped this thing off my arm and I eat it. I'm like, that's the reason why it's not.
Fentanyl. Oh my god!
that's the reason why it's not doing what it's supposed to do.
So you're thinking it's like a fentanyl patch? You like cut into it?
yeah. Oh, dude, it was terrible. So then they gave me a second one, and they're like, you know, this is like a 72-hour extended release patch, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm eating a second one too.
Oh my god!
It was the worst decision I ever made in my life, dude. I am dope sick in my mom's basement off of these like Klonidine patches, getting off some like opiates and everything. And I mean, it was
that is
the
so funny.
Oh, dude, it was fucking terrible. Like, I can laugh about it now, but it wasn't funny then.
I'm telling my wife that. after this podcast.
Oh, dude, it's funny.
Thank you so hard.
Dude, for anybody that knows the difference, like, you're like, yeah, that was really stupid.
That's so stupid.
But for an addict seeking a feeling, yeah, you know, it's very logical. It's not giving me the thing that I want, so let me eat this thing.
But it makes sense where you'd be like clonopin, clonidine, and then, like,
yeah,
then you'd be like, oh, there's fentanyl patches. Like, oh, yeah, fentanyl patches, you, like, cut them open, smoke them.
Or yeah, yeah.
Like, so I get where your mind was going.
I wasn't even thinking.
Funny because it's like, it doesn't do anything like that.
I listened to Molly's podcast this week. We shamed the shit out of her for smoking fentanyl patches. We were like, gross, Molly. What the fuck are you doing?
Well, it's super dangerous. That's my thing with fentanyl patches. Like, you don't know. Like, you know, so.
Yeah, and I wasn't thinking of anything of like a fentanyl patch, right? Like, I just wanted to feel different than the way that I felt. And I was like, man, this just isn't doing what I wanted to do. So let me try.
My question is, how did they, like, come out the other end?
I don't even remember, dude. Like, okay, I'm not even kidding.
Dude, that's gotta be unpleasant. Dude, like, the other end is probably, like, what, constipation for, like, a week and then, like, a terrible feeling?
Dude, I don't even know. Like, I couldn't. I mean, I was dope sick, so everything was coming out anyway, so it didn't really matter.
You didn't have Suboxone, so you didn't have the terrible constipation. Yeah, so you just, everything was coming out.
Yeah, it was just Niagara Falls. But the worst part about it, man, is it made me so weak because it's a blood pressure medication and it just messes with your whole system. Plus, dude, and I'm like crawling up the stairs, just trying to get upstairs to get like bread or something.
Oh, yeah, you probably couldn't stand up too fast or you'd pass out.
Oh, dude, it was absolute, it was terrible. So then I show up to, and these are 72-hour patches, by the way. Mm-hmm. So they're not just going away. So I show up to this rehab, this IOP on Monday morning. This guy from AA takes me, right? And he's super chipper. He's like 6'8". He's like 70 years old. He's got white hair. And he's like, hey, man, really glad you're getting into recovery. I'm like, shut the fuck up. Yeah. You know, like, I don't, like, you are the opposite of everything that I am embodying right now.
Yeah.
Like, I just need you to jump out the car for me. Yeah. Right. So we pull up in front of this place, man. He's like, you need some help getting out of the car? I'm like, fuck you, dude. Like, no, I'm good, man. Dude, I did a face plant in the middle of the parking lot because my legs gave out from, like, not being, like, not eating these clonidine patches. Oh, I mean, dude, God. It was like these people come rushing out of, like, the institution. Oh, my God, are you okay? I'm like, I need something now.
Yeah.
And, like, dude, like, you know, I don't even want to name the place, but, like, what ended up happening is they pumped me full of Suboxone, bro, you know? And, like, for me, like, I don't hate Suboxone, and I don't really want to get too far into that. Like, you know, I think there's a time and a place for everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm 100% aware of, like, harm reduction, and I think that, like, everything has a place, you know? But for me, like, ultimately what happened is it became a crutch.
Yeah.
You know, it got me to a place where I was able to find recovery for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, for me, like, I believe in total abstinence.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me how you get there.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's process is different. But for me, it's this idea of, like, moving forward constantly.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Always trying to improve and all that. And, like, I get really weird about sharing that because there's so many different opinions on it.
It can be a very volatile subject.
Absolutely. And what I really try to do.
You got off clonidine patches through Suboxone. What are you talking about?
Oh, my God, dude. I never should have been on clonidine patches. But honestly, like, if I'm 100% truthful about, like, when I got put on Suboxone, man, it got me to a place where I could sit still long enough to fucking listen to the message.
Right? Yeah,
you know? So,
yeah.
Like, I need to have a little bit of gratitude for where that's concerned.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Like, I'll throw my opinion. My opinion is, like, as long as you're not sticking a fucking needle in your arm, it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely, dude. And,
like,
progress, not perfection.
Yeah.
Of course.
Right? And obviously, it can be abused and everything, but it's like, man, Suboxone's not going to fucking kill you.
Yeah.
And we know so many people. Matt S., like, lots of people who, you're on it for X amount of time, but it gives you just a heightened... It's a step above your heroin fucking days, so you can hear something.
Yeah, of course.
And so seeds can get planted, and then you can take the next step.
And I think, like, a lot of times, like, when I'm really starting to think about, like, a lot of times, like, we have this black or white thinking, right? Like, you're either clean or you're not, and all this other stuff. And like I said before, like, the process of getting to that point doesn't matter to me.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And I will hug somebody the same way, whether on methadone, heroin, Suboxone, whatever.
Absolutely.
I don't care, you know? So, but I also want... for me, like somebody, or I need to be doing it in a healthy way. Yep. I need to be working with a doctor. I need mm-hmm. to have a plan. I need to have structure. Mm-hmm. I can't just be willy nilly going down to, you know, North Avenue and
yeah.
getting a couple, an 8 gram strip off the 8 milligram strip off the guy.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that's whatever. Anyway, I digress.
That's intention yeah. though, by the way. Like that's up to the individual of like going out and doing that stuff.
Of
like,
course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So, like some of that's just where you are.
Right? Yeah.
Like, where are you in your recovery journey? Are you ready to take that next step? Or are you, you know, still looking for that?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Anyway, we digress. Yeah,
I'm still looking about these clonidine patches.
Oh, yeah.
I can't ask Google.
You're down the rabbit hole, dude.
I was can you eat these? And I have not seen
anything
any
that's
information on that.
I promise you can eat them. I am living proof sitting here that you can eat these patches.
Yeah. Don't do it. Anybody out there, don't eat that shit.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's not a good thing.
Google doesn't have any recommendations on it, so I don't know.
All right,
at your own risk, right?
don't do it. Just don't. You use medication the way it's prescribed.
Yes.
Here, let's go to that. You know, so it got me to a place where I could listen to the message of recovery and everything. And basically, I started going to a 12-step program.
Mm-hmm.
And I really started believing in what this program had to offer.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I was talking about was complete abstinence.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of that scared the shit out of me.
Of course.
Right? So we talk about honesty, open-minded, and willingness.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the willingness. Mm-hmm. I had the open-mindedness, but I didn't have the honesty.
Yeah.
And this is the part where, like, the fellowship kind of can play, like, maybe like a detrimental role is I walked into a meeting one day and heard somebody dogging Suboxone
mm-hmm.
and I'm on it in a meeting
yep.
and I'm listening to this and I'm a newcomer, by the way, mm-hmm. you know, like this might have been my fourth or fifth meeting. And I'm listening to this person share and I'm like, one, I don't know the experience they have with that.
Yeah.
Two, like this does not make me want to come back to another meeting.
Absolutely.
And now that I've been around for a little while, we have a third tradition. Right. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop.
Absolutely.
Right. Yep. So, but being new, I didn't know that.
No.
You know, like, I'm just like, oh man, Suboxone's the devil.
Dude,
you
know, opinions can fucking kill people, man.
It's crazy. Right. Mm-hmm. So, the thing was, is that like, I didn't let that like turn me away from meetings.
Good.
But what I did let it do is lie about what I was doing. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's the honesty piece that yep. I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like I came around the program and went to meetings for a long time with this secret, dude.
Yeah.
And we talk about how secrets keep us sick.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am like, dude, I just turned 21 years old mm-hmm. coming into this program. I'm like running around, like lying about everything. I'm only letting people in so far. Like I'm reading the basic text and doing like a lot of things that like the program recommends, like step work. Mm-hmm. But I have this secret that I'm holding on to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's just slowly eating me up inside. And one of the things that like I love about being in a program or I love about recovery is like gaining this conscience.
Oh yeah.
Right. So like for me, I have this understanding that like my conscience isn't this voice in my head that says like I'm doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's this feeling in my gut that like, man, this sucks. Like yeah. something isn't right. This isn't jiving with like what I want to be as a person today.
Yeah.
And that voice just started coming up, right? Like that inner dialogue in my spirit just started coming up. And I remember celebrating a year clean on Suboxone.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in the front of the room and like I shared this amazing story.
Mm-hmm.
I quoted the basic text and everything sounded really good. But on the inside, like I was dying, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? On the app, social acceptability does not equal recovery. I didn't understand that this was an inside job, dude. And I still was just trying to fool everybody.
Yeah.
You know? And finally, it got to a point. I was picking up my 18-month key tag and I picked it up and I sat back down on my seat and it all just crumbled in on me. I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't the fact of like being on Suboxone or any of that kind of stuff. It was just the fact that like I wasn't being honest with where I was mm-hmm. as a person, you know, as a recovering addict.
And like, that's the way it should go. Like the individual should be able to come to that realization because it makes it more personal and a more powerful experience for you instead of outside shaming. Like people should not be shamed or guilted into that. Like if that's the path they have to take, let them take that path. Like,
yeah.
Because they're still coming. They're still here. They're like they're doing what we say. Keep coming back.
Yeah.
And who gives a fuck if they're on fucking Suboxone? sometimes it takes 18 months. Sometimes it takes people 7 years, whatever. Yeah. If they're coming, let them get to that realization themselves. Yeah. Let people have their process.
Yeah, I think the most important thing, honestly, about recovery is it has to be an organic, genuine connection. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it can't, sure, outside things can influence it, but they're only going to influence so much. How many times have we heard somebody backing up jail time you know, so many external consequences, but still can't get this thing? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? At some point, that organic connection has to come from within inside.
Yep.
And that's basically what happened for me.
Yep.
You know, like, it happened right there. I was like, man, I just don't want to lie about this anymore. Like, I don't want to be this person anymore. And the path that, like, I decided to take, I was like, I just need to get off. You know what I mean? I need to get off Suboxone. It did its thing.
I was about to say, would you get right back up and get a 1-day e-tag?
No. So
that would be hysterical.
Well, no, like, it gets even deeper than that. So then I started abusing my Suboxone. Mm. Right. So, like, I went into this taper with a doctor. We had it all planned out. And, like, you know, I'm down to like a half a milligram a day. Mm. It's like the craziest little, like, that's me chopping up a strip. And, like, you know, like, I'm trying to, like, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, well, maybe I'll just take half of this strip. And then it gave me the feeling I was looking for. Well, maybe I'll just take a whole strip. And, you know, all of a sudden my prescription's running out before it's supposed to. And then I'm calling, oh, I lost my prescription. You know what I mean? Like, doing all, like, right back into disease thinking. It was no longer about recovery.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting in group one day and my counselor, and I love her, dude. Like, her and I have a relationship even to this day. She absolutely saved my life. Nice. And she was like, if you keep going down this path, like, I know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the doctor kept writing me prescriptions. That's why I don't want to, like,
doctors don't give a shit.
Dude, like, he just was like, oh, it's just not working for you. Let's increase your dose. And
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah, they don't care.
No, like, I'm spiraling right now. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going deeper into this. And she was like, RJ, like, I know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, on break, here's three numbers I need you to call if you're serious about being, you know, in recovery.
Yeah.
And it's to inpatient programs. And I accepted it. I said, you know what? I do want to do this. You know what I mean? I remember sitting in that meeting and how I felt. And, like, I was just like, I don't want to live this way anymore.
Yeah.
And, dude, so I went in and I went into, I will name this one, Mountain Manor.
Yep.
The damn motel on the side of a mountain with a liquor store across the street.
The one in Irvington? Or the one in Towson?
No, the one away at Emmitsburg.
He's talking about Emmitsburg. You went to Emmitsburg.
He's not talking about Mountain Manor in Irvington.
No, the motel on the side of a mountain, dude. Country, bro.
Okay.
The only thing in any kind of vicinity is it's literally a liquor store across the street.
Yeah.
You look out the window and it's just bleep, bleep, bleep. Weirdest place for a treatment center and then, you know, liquor store, right?
That's a great marketing plan by the liquor store. Like, we're in a great spot here.
Dude just went AMA. Where's he at? No, he's across the street. You know?
He's at Bob's Liquors.
Yeah. So, like, I jump into this place, dude, and I don't know. Like, I had this zest for recovery at that point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I remember being on blackout, and they gave me a red tag with my name on it. And that means, like, you can have, like, medically assisted, you know, coming off of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to give me Suboxone, get off Suboxone. It was kind of, I guess, like a quick tape or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember walking in there. I said, no, I'm not doing that. Like, it's 100% cold fucking turkey. Ugh. You know, like, that's just where I'm at this point.
Yeah.
24 milligrams cold fucking turkey.
Nice.
All right. So this is for like 5 days. No, it sucked, dude. Yeah. I'm getting there. So for the half-life on Suboxone is amazing, right? So for 5 days, like, I felt amazing. Like, I'm like, okay, I can deal with this. This isn't that bad.
Oh, that sucked.
As soon as they took that tag off and they put it to black that I was no longer allowed to accept, like, medical assistance or whatever, dude, it got bad. Like, oh my God. I was sitting in the shower. I stole, like, one of the lawn chairs out of the front porch. I'm sitting in the shower on this lawn chair, just like, oh God, save me. Like, it was fucking terrible. My legs would not stop twitching. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I had their restless legs.
Mm-hmm. How many years were you on Suboxone?
And, like, at that, it's kind of weird. Like, I like to throw, like, my higher power was there to help me with that situation, because if that tag wouldn't have changed, you know what I mean? And I remember running in there like, oh no, I need Suboxone now. And they're like, no, dude, like, your tag's black. Like, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Like, that was like a straight God moment for me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, like, dude, I just sat through it. you know? And Suboxone just takes so long to start feeling normal again. Mm-hmm. You know, like that is my experience, you know? And I remember like the first month was terrible. The second month, like you're starting to gain energy back, but it's still like groggy and everything. Third month, I like didn't know where I was or any of that kind of stuff. Like it just was like a very weird progression. Whereas like dope, like you're just done. You know what I mean? It's like a week, he sucks, and you're just like, all right, we're okay.
Yeah.
This was just like a long, drawn-out process. But I remember going through that, and I show back up to my home group, and like, dude, I like walk in there like a fucking superhero. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm back, motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, I was ready to get honest now. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about honesty is the antidote to addiction, right? And I remember walking up to get that white key tag, dude. I'm just like, this is my fucking white key tag, bro. And like, you know, I picked up the white key tag as a symbolization because like I had 90 days at that point or something, or 30 days or whatever. But I was just like, hey, I'm back, you know? And for me, like I had one of the best home groups, man, you know, like they circled around me and lifted me, step into the light. So, and I had a bunch of old heads in there, dude, that like, I think the clean time, if you put together that meeting, was probably like 400 years or something like that. There was just guys that like revolutionized my recovery, you know, like, you know, there's a saying that like, I'd give the shirt off my back for somebody. Like there's a story of him literally doing that for a homeless guy, you know? And like he embodied the principles of the program. And he ultimately, he became one of my sponsors and everything. But like, those were the people that I was hanging around with when I first got in recovery. Those are the people teaching me about the principles, the steps, the traditions. And, you know, our group consciences were fucking 4 hours long, dude. Like everybody would make everybody would make a joke about it. Right.
Yep.
And I look back at it and like, however crazy it was, the fact of the matter is I was with people that were so passionate about like the message of recovery and, you know, the program that like, that's what they were willing to do.
Yeah.
We would bring snacks, donuts. Yeah. I mean, like, dude, it was like a whole thing, you know, once a month, like the whole home group, you know? So,
I'll be honest, like, I love the fellowship. Fuck group conscience. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's tough, dude.
It's just me.
Yeah.
It's my personal opinion. I don't like it.
Hey, not everything's for everybody. Yeah. You know what I mean? For me, like, I'm super into it. You know what I mean? And not to the point where it's like what we were doing then. Like, I think that was a little over.
Yeah.
But, like, dude, I love area service. I love getting involved. I've been on regional levels. You know, I've been a part of spiritual retreats. And I don't, like, I just love service work, man. Yeah. You know? So, and like I said, to each their own.
Yeah.
You know?
Give me an H&I commitment and I'm good.
That's amazing. Yeah. And dude, H&I is a great form of service, know? But I feel like everything is still important in its own right. Yeah. You know, all these different forms of service in combination make up what we have today.
Yeah.
So everything has its place. So like these were the examples that I was basing my early recovery off of, you know? And how much time do I have? Do I just keep ripping it off? I feel like I got to be
good. Five more minutes.
All right. So now coming back, I have the honesty piece. So honest, open, and willing, dude. And I hit the ground running.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could not stop me from going to meetings. They said 90.
You were ever. You were everywhere.
Oh, dude. They said, you remember me there. Oh, my God, dude. Yeah. They said 90 and 90. I was like, 120 and 90. I'm an addict for recovery. Let's go. They said, chase this thing like you chase the drug. I'm going to chase it harder than I will be the poster child of this program. Dude, I got wrapped up with guys and all of a sudden we started getting called the God Squad. How unspiritual is that, dude?
I fucking remember that.
Yeah,
holy
dude.
Holy shit.
How unspiritual is that? You're in this program, right? Talking about like all these spiritual principles and in comes these five guys from like fucking, you know, Northeast Freedom area and we're just like, we're down here to shut this bitch down. Oh, we're going to all share for 10 minutes and we're going to close this meeting and you're not going to know what hit you, but you're going to stay clean, right? Storm after storm, you know?
So much ego.
Oh, dude, as much as I hate it now, I loved it then.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yep.
It made me feel involved. Like we were, like we thought we were doing good things. You know, we fire people up, dude. Like it was fun. So like, you know, I got just so in
the Wolf Pack and the God Squad.
I love the Wolf Pack. I like the Wolf Pack was amazing.
The committee.
Oh, the committee that was slightly before me. The committee was breaking up before, like, there was a clique called the committee, like, right as I was coming in.
From this area?
From this area.
Okay.
Yeah, they called themselves the committee. And
they were very toxic.
They were like the mean girls. Like, it was
they
not.
They were mean girls.
They were mean girls. It was a lot of mean girls and then some mean dudes in there as well. Yeah. It was gross. The wolf pack was all inclusive, though. It was great.
What was the wolf
pack? You guys were not all inclusive.
So it was me, Nathan, Brad W., Donnie C., and Matt S., and you know, Kyle.
When you have a group, it isn't inclusive.
It was.
It's a group.
Listen, don't.
I mean, can we say that about the fellowship, though? The program? It's a group. It's a home group.
Well, we already talked about the third tradition and how that isn't always
Were the requirements to be in the wolf pack?
No, absolutely not. You just had to be cool as shit.
Sounds pretty inclusive to me.
I don't know how I got in. Or Donnie.
I think you guys kind of started it. I think it was you.
So it was started without our consent.
Aren't you the one who made that dumb, like...
No, thing? That was Sharon. Sharon made that. Sharon memed us all into a picture, and, like, we got dubbed the wolf pack. It's we did not dub ourselves the wolf pack.
It's a good picture.
It's a fantastic picture. I look like trash, because the picture they actually used was me using. I was like, I'm high in that picture.
Hell yeah, dude.
I was like, thank you for doing a deep dive into my Facebook, but I'm high as fucking, I'm higher than Eagle Dick in that picture.
So I guess what I'm hearing is that, like, if you get involved in an awesome inclusive group with inside the group, you're going to stay clean for many years.
There you go.
Is that what we're taking away from this?
That's how you do it. Yep.
All right. It doesn't matter. It's the Wolf Pack, God Squad, Committee.
Yeah, the Rat Pack, whatever you got to call yourselves.
Yep. But yeah, man. So it was just fun to, like, have fun in recovery. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point, I'm 21, 22 years old. I'm 23 years old. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm still young, man. Just trying to find my way.
You're
trying
to be, like, 32?
34. I'm getting old, man. And, you know, so, like, finding out that you can have fun without drugs was, like, a huge thing for me, dude.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, like, you know, I had a sponsor that was older than me, and he's like, look, you need to get involved with younger kids, because I'm an old soul. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I grab on to the older guys that are, like, about the program, and, like, it just kind of, like, talks to me differently. And then, like, he was like, no, you need to go out and find people your own age, mm-hmm. and go socialize, go interact, go be a person, a young person in recovery. Yeah. So then I started getting hooked up with those guys, dude. And, like, it was fun, man.
Yeah.
You know, convention after convention, mm-hmm. doing the 3 a.m. marathon meetings, the dances. I mean, like, dude, like, we were just drinking Red Bull after Red Bull.
So many Red Bulls.
I need, like, an IV bag of Red Bull that I could just travel with bad. Because, like, you know bad. What I mean? It was definitely.
It got to the point where I was drinking, like, 40 ounces of Red Bull a day.
Oh, that's crazy. It's early recovery, dude.
Yeah.
Like, why not? Why the hell not, dude? Okay. Coffee and Red Bull. It doesn't matter. It's all good.
I didn't drink coffee until, like, year 3 or 4. Mm. I hated coffee, but fucking Red Bull.
You probably drink it black now, don't you?
Oh, hell no. No, I'm not a savage. No.
I guess I'm a savage.
Cream, no sugar.
Savage.
Yeah, I do black coffee.
Black coffee
Let's
all
do
day.
It. Let's do it. Yeah.
Gross. That's why I keep Carly around. She keeps me honest.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Me neither.
Okay. I just say shit.
I mean, it's okay if you want, like, all that sugar and shit in your coffee. It's
fuck off.
The only time I get sugar and shit in my coffee is when I go to Starbucks.
Yeah.
All the other times I drink it black.
Ooh.
Okay, I'm a piece of shit then.
Right. I treat myself at Starbucks.
You've only been drinking coffee for a few years. It takes a little while before you build that.
Dude,
habit.
Don't condescend me. Don't condescend me. Anyway, God Squad. You're getting with younger guys, convention after convention.
Yeah, man. So, like, that's what my early recovery started to look like. But in this time frame, I also was super involved with step work.
Mm-hmm.
I was super involved with area service. I was super involved with, like, the program as a whole, man. Mm-hmm. And I think in 3 years, I went through all 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'd worked them to the best of my ability. And, like, I really started forming, like, an idea of who I wanted to be, mm-hmm. and who I was as a person. And it was the first time in my life where I had started to think about things like that. You know what I mean? Like, it was just always drugs, or mm-hmm. it was always getting clean, or it was always this, or it was always that. So here I am, like, you know, 24, like, going to take this company over,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I'm 34 years old now. I'm looking at taking over a business that's like pretty established in Baltimore. It's like one of the top hydraulic companies here.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody does what we do.
Oh, and you're welding straight dimes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'd like to. I'm not going to humble brag.
Oh, I'll brag for you. His welding is fantastic. You post it on social media and I peep it and I'm like, that's pretty.
Yeah. So like, you know, and I love it and I have a passion for it, you mm-hmm. know? So like basically what I'm saying is like I did all this work back then to set me up for today, mm-hmm. you know? And like when I think about recovery, dude, I would have sold myself so short. We talk about like if you made a list of everything you wanted back then, how much would you sell yourself short of what you have today?
No idea what I was capable of.
Yeah. And even like my problems, dude, I like to think of that saying that like, you know, the problems I have today are what I prayed for yesterday. You know what I mean? Like I try to keep it real humble like that and like this attitude of gratitude, man.
Yeah.
And I don't mean
great
to throw.
Great meeting.
Yeah, absolutely great meeting. And I don't mean to throw a bunch of one-liners out there, but like, dude, the cliches are cliches for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, once you start going through some stuff and you need a reason to say that, it makes sense why that's absolutely a saying in the program. So, I mean, I guess I don't really know what else to share. I mean, I could go really, no, we don't have that much time.
No, everybody's story, like, we could talk for hours, but yeah, definitely have some questions for you, and I'm going to defer to Carly for the first one.
Really? Again? Yes. Mm. You've been so generous.
I'm turning over a new leaf.
Well, since you called yourself the God Squad, how has a power, higher power, other than yourself, aided your recovery?
Mm.
That's a fantastic question.
This is a deep question.
Yeah.
So, man, this is a long question. Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
All right. So, when I first got clean, I had no understanding of a higher power. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, in a religious sense, baptized Lutheran, but never went to church or any of that kind of thing. So I came into the program hearing about a higher power. Like, I just didn't believe in anything.
Yep.
Like, I didn't have anything to believe in. Mm-hmm. So for me, through the years that I've been clean, it's been this process of trying to figure out what I truly believe in. And I tried to like put it in a box. I've tried reading books. I've tried to do all these different things, religious ideas, blah, 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 blah. But honestly, like what it talks about in our program or the program I'm in is that it's a God of my understanding. And for me, it's taken a long time to find that understanding. And I'm actually on my third step right now.
Great
stuff. All right. And for like the umpteenth time. And for me, what was the question again?
So how has a higher power aided your recovery?
So the higher power for me has aided my recovery in the idea of like, I don't need to control everything. Mm-hmm. So I live in the realm of black and white thinking. And when things don't go the way that I want them to go, I try to control, whether it be through subtle manipulation of the situation or a big manipulation of the situation. I always want to maintain this idea, which we all know control is an illusion. It doesn't really exist.
Yep.
It's like the box that I want to put it in.
Yep.
But having this understanding that even if it doesn't work out the way that I want it to, it will be okay.
Yep.
No matter what. I have been through so many ups and downs in recovery. So I've had drugs in my hand where I've almost used. I've been through situations with loved ones almost dying through crazy births. I've been through heartbreaks. I mean, I've been through so many things. And guess what? I'm still here today.
Yep.
I have 100% track record for getting through those bad situations, and it's because I have love and a higher power. You know what I mean? It's because I know I'm not the end all be all. And this also falls into the idea of the difference between self-supporting and self-sufficiency, right? So self-sufficiency is this idea like I can fix everything. I don't need anything. It's totally centered in ego.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas self-supporting is this idea that like, okay, there. Yes, I need to show up and like bring the shovel to move the mountain, but I can also ask for help. Mm. It's not like it's based in humility that when things get too big, like I can reach out and say, I can't do this myself. And I lived in self-sufficiency for so long. So even in recovery, I mean, I'm talking like seven, eight, and nine, like total self-sufficiency, work 12 steps of the program, have sponsees, go to meetings. I got this. So like I had no choice but to turn it over to a higher power, you know?
Hmm.
Fantastic. That might be the title, actually. Bring the shovel to move the mountain. That's a fantastic title for this.
That's a fantastic answer.
It was a fantastic answer. I'm going to do a quick round robin question for everyone, because you just mentioned the cliches. What's a cliche that you hate? Because I think we all have one that's just like, that's like, it's still true, but it just annoys you. Mine personally is one day at a time. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get what it's trying to say, and, yeah. and it's valuable. But like my problem with it, I'm like, there's no other fucking option. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I can't do 3 days at a time. I can't do a month at a time. I have to do it today. One day. Yeah, that, yeah. That's called life. Of course I'm going to do it one day at a time.
I'm going to up you there with 1 minute at a time.
1 minute at a time?
1 second.
1 second at a time? Yeah.
Like, how far can we go?
Yeah. This? Like, what are the options here? Like, there are no options. So, yes, I get it. And in like... one breath at a time. Yes. Yeah. I understand it. And it has its place. It just annoys me.
I get it.
What's a cliche that annoys you?
Oh, man. Meeting makers make it.
Okay. Oh, I don't like that one.
Yeah. Meeting makers make it to meetings. And there's a problem. If any old timers are going to listen to this, they're going to be like, I'm going to kill this kid.
Yeah.
You know, but the truth is like everybody's recovery is different. Mm-hmm. You know, we live in a day of age that mm-hmm. like we have proof that like, it's whatever works for the individual. Like, yeah. we don't need to have it so structured into this box. Mm-hmm. And like, there are some people that rarely go to meetings but maintain like long lengths of clean time and are happy yeah. with their life. There are mm-hmm. other people that unfortunately, I don't mean to say unfortunately, but they have to live in meetings because like that's what works for them, yep. you know? But I do want to say there's also a reading in the Just for Today that talks about hiding in meetings.
Yep.
You know, at some point we need to take everything that we've learned in this program and take it outward. And that's like
the 12th step.
Exactly. Yep. You know what I mean? So
that all your affairs.
Yeah. Yeah. Meeting makers make it. Like, that's the one.
What about you, Eric?
Take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth.
Like, that's a shit cliche.
Anyone who would say that to me at this point in my life, I would just be like, you can fuck straight off, sir.
Yep. Yep. You can fuck right off, sir.
Like,
yep. Yeah. No, if you need to speak, speak. Absolutely. Yeah.
Everybody needs to be heard, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you going to suffer in silence?
Yeah. Like, come I don't on care now. If you're high in the
What's
meeting.
What's the like, fucking point of the burning desire?
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely.
What's the point? You can't have it both ways.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you, Carly, a cliche you don't
like. I'm thinking.
She loves them all. Mm.
I don't think I really like any of them, to be honest.
Wow. That's cool.
I mean, yeah, they're there for a reason, yeah. right? But you hear them over and over and over again, and it's just like, shut the fuck up.
Do we have a negative Nancy in the building?
Maybe, no. a little bit.
I kind of hate all of them, too. Honest with you, I was just picking my least favorite.
No, there's some good ones.
Meeting makers make it's one that is always.
Yeah, I really don't like that one. Maybe because I feel personally attacked because I'm not really making a lot of meetings right now, but
it's okay.
The other one that really bothers me that I haven't shared about in a while is like the like just pray for it like sort of thing, but in relation to like jobs and yeah. like doing things with your funny is I had what Step and Clean was my home group for a year, right? Or yeah. 2 years. So mm-hmm. I had like a noon meeting and I had like that, you know, a yeah. night meeting. And my favorite thing in noon meetings were people being like, you know, I've just been praying for a job, you know, yeah. like, and like, you know, I'm hoping God will answer. And I'm just sitting there like,
did you put out
did
any
you
applications?
Apply for did you a job? Apply for a job? Like, yeah. I've seen you at this meeting like every day at noon for the past Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Have you applied? Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, I've just been praying so hard. And it's like, have you done fucking anything?
And that's why I love what he said. You bring the shovel to move the mountain.
Yeah, yes. absolutely.
Yeah, you can't just fucking hope for
yeah.
it, man.
Yep.
Yep.
All right, Carly, what do you got?
Oh, back to me.
Yes.
Questions. How has your addiction manifested itself in your recovery?
Oh, my gosh. And you guys are coming with the hard ones, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I guess like what I was talking about earlier with the self-sufficiency, mm-hmm. you know, thinking, getting to this idea of thinking that like I've gotten all I can from recovery and that like I can deal with anything, like me personally, I can deal with this. Like I don't need the intervention of anything outside of myself, whether it be from the program, whether it be from a wife, right? And for me, I didn't realize how much I was missing a connection with a good sponsor, mm-hmm. like a good male in recovery, a role model. And now that I have that, I realize how much like I was like taken away from myself, mm-hmm. you know? And it's ultimately like catapulted my recovery to a new place where like I'm working steps. And I'm not saying that like, you know, the sponsor makes me be, you know, like makes my recovery what it is. But at the same time, like when you have somebody that's cultivating that atmosphere of recovery and like this dude's got 36 years clean, right? Mm-hmm. You talk to him after he gets out of a meeting, and it was like the first meeting he's ever been to. Mm-hmm. He just has this passion for recovery, and it lights the fire inside of me and makes me want to do, you know, better in recovery.
Yeah.
And, you know, through going through the self-sufficiency and becoming miserable, absolutely miserable. Like, dude, I'm like pretty in shape now. 2 months ago, I was 205 pounds.
Ooh.
I've lost 27.
That's recovery weight for you.
Oh my gosh. And I lost 27 pounds in 2 months.
Nice.
And I mean, it's been like one of those things that like, I just wasn't doing anything.
That's also some COVID weight, I'm sure.
Well, dude, like I was waking up.
Baby weight.
Baby weight.
Yeah. That was sympathy weight. Yeah. That's what it was.
So like I was waking up, going to work, coming home, going to bed, waking up, going to work, coming home, going to bed. I mean, I can do this, you know, forever, you know? So like there was no purpose in my life, you know? So like that self-sufficiency was just taking over in a place that like, sure, I was making it through.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I didn't get in recovery to be this miserable person, you know? So I don't know.
All right. Fantastic. And I know you didn't talk about this in your story, but I know a little bit more about your story. You recently had a baby, and I know that was a complicated
thing.
It was not just like, oh, here, take your baby home, and everything's good. How did you get through that, man? Like how difficult was that? And like, how did recovery help you through that?
Dude, this is a heavy question, man. This is a loaded one too. So I guess I kind of got to give a little bit of background, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So my wife and I struggled for 3 years with infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through all these different stages and we finally were able to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And during the pregnancy, my wife gets COVID.
Oh, sure.
And she is, I don't know, 9 months pregnant at this point. Mm-hmm. And like, it's bad. Like for me, I've gotten COVID twice and I remodeled the house. I was like, oh, I got 2 weeks off. Like I'm going to remodel the house. Like it was like a walk in the park.
Yeah.
But for her, it was
COVID fucked me up.
Dude, it was bad. Yeah, it was really bad. And you know, so like she has COVID and like we're monitoring the baby as well. We're feeling her kick and all that good stuff. And my wife would always talk about feeling the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I realized it was a couple of days since she said something about feeling the baby. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we end up going into the hospital, get admitted, and shit just turns sour, dude, you know? And emergency C-section has to be done. And, you know, I remember because it was emergency C-section, they couldn't put the curtain up. They didn't have this curtain that went all the way up.
Oh.
So it was like a knee-high curtain.
Oh, yeah.
And I could see everything. Yep. And I just want to put it out there for like any woman that gives birth or has a C-section, I have the utmost respect for you after going through that experience.
Absolutely.
Because it was absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And the nurse was like, you don't have to watch this. And I was like, oh, but I do.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't look away.
Yeah. And I mean, they're just putting like parts of her over here, parts of her over here. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, nothing was as amazing as when they pulled that baby girl out, dude. You know, they pulled her out and she was 3 months early at this point.
Oof.
So it's not like she was planned to be coming out, you know, like 3 months early. And with NICU babies, they have to do what's called the golden hour. So they have to stabilize them, get their temperature right, breathing right. So like, they're like, okay, here's your baby and we're gone.
Yeah.
You know, so like she got taken away to the NICU. And through that process, my wife wouldn't stop bleeding. You know, like I don't want to make, I can make it a long story, but I'm not going to. They were monitoring her. They came back in to like see how she was doing. And it was just this puddle of blood, right? And it was crazy. And as soon as they like revealed this puddle of blood, her stats just went whoop and she started dying, you know, right there. Once they stopped the bleeding, we were good. Mm-hmm. Well, no, this U-Haul sized box of blood shows up and they're like, okay, we now have to get this into her.
Yeah.
Dude, four IVs going. I mean, it was like an episode out of ER. There was nurses running around, doctors, surgeon. I mean, it was absolute insanity. So I go through all that. Michaela's my daughter, ends up being in the NICU for 3 months. And my wife and I are literally just walking. Like our life is going to the NICU and coming home, going to the NICU and coming home.
How long were you in the hospital like before you guys went home?
7 days. She made a miraculous recovery. Yes. They called it the New Year's miracle. So like Michaela was born on the 3rd, but it was like over that weekend. And, you know, we went in the 1st. Seeing what they were able to do. So Lindsay or you know, Lindsay walks out, you know, a week later and is like, she's got bruising. She, I mean, she's had emergency C-section, all, but I mean, with everything considered. So, you know, I remember getting home, dude, and this is where it gets hairy. Like, I remember getting home and I was by myself for the first time. I dropped Lindsay off at the NICU. She was, we could, oh, because this was COVID, we could only see our daughter one at a time. Mm-hmm. We didn't even get to meet our daughter until like a month and a half later. What? So, yeah, it was, it was absolute insanity. So like we had,
I remember it. Yeah, because man. Like you would take a picture where she was like in the little
isolate, dude. Yeah. We couldn't even touch her. Like we did get to do skin to skin, but it was like a whole thing that you had to go through to pull her out of the isolate, wrap her up in blankets. She had to be swaddled in you. It was like, I don't even know how to explain it, dude. It was like living a weird
alternate reality.
Alternate reality. Yeah, absolutely. And, I remember being at home after dropping Lindsay off at the NICU, and she was visiting Michaela, and I was holding her pain meds. She had gotten that emergency C-section and everything, and she had these pain meds. And it was right around Christmas time. And it's so funny because, like, before I share this story, like, I'm not, like, religious at all, right?
Yeah.
But this is kind of funny. Not this part. God, this was such a bad setup. So my grandmother passed away. That's not the funny part.
Jesus.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. The setup for this was terrible. So my grandmother passed it away. I set up this nativity scene in her honor. Mm-hmm. And we're better to hide these pain meds than in baby Jesus's. I'm not kidding. I'm like, she would never look there. Right? Yeah. And I made this whole like thing. I shared it on Facebook. But what Facebook didn't know is I had these pain meds hidden underneath the baby Jesus.
Yeah.
It's like these clay figurines. So like the bottom's all cut out.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So, so like I'm hiding pain meds with baby Jesus. And
you're definitely not getting into heaven now, buddy.
And dude, like I remember like being sitting there and all I wanted to do was get high because I had been through this whole range of emotions. I was tapped out. Dude, you know what I mean? Like sleepless nights, watching my daughter almost die, watching my wife almost die. I mean, some real,
it's horror show shit.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
Fucking terrible.
And like, you know, thank God Lindsay doesn't really remember too much from that night. I remember every detail like in full color, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And when they pulled that bed sheet away and it was just that puddle, of, like I can't get that out of my brain, you know? So I remember standing there and like, I didn't like want to like get high. I just didn't want to feel.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have these feelings, man.
Oh yeah.
And this is what happened. I remember I had my hands on the counter and I look up at baby Jesus. And I didn't have like this like awe-inspiring, like heavenly moment. Yeah. But what I thought about was my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I got to share with my grandmother that I was in recovery before she passed away. And I was like, I'll call her Bygum. I was like, Bygum wouldn't want me to use these.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did is I did what was so hard for so many people was pick up the damn phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to a sponsee and he's like, dude, this is what he told me. It was super simple, but it was super powerful. Your daughter needs you in her life.
Oof.
And like, I'm like, oh, it hit my heart, dude. You know what I mean? And like, it was 9.5 years of recovery that came down to that one phone call. It was literally either pick up the pain meds or pick up the phone. And like, I got through it clean, dude, you know, with the help of the program. And
ooh, I'm totally trying not to cry right
now. Yeah, dude, it was like some real powerful stuff, dude. So that's how I got through that.
Shut up, Eric.
So, yeah. I mean, sorry that was a long answer to that question.
That was
intense. I feel like
it's okay. Intense. You're letting David, you know, get his emotions and his feels out.
Dude, like, we're all dads, and you have a daughter as well. Mm-hmm. So, like,
I'm not a dad.
Well,
what about your puppies, though?
Yeah.
I'm a mother.
Her a mom. She's missing a piece
Let's
of anatomy.
Let's be honest, you're probably more of a dad than I am.
I don't know if that's a compliment or...
It's a compliment and a total shade on myself.
I don't know. Take that back.
That's intense. Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway, you're the best for a baby mom, I know. Anyway, back to you. What's the question?
I don't know. Do you have any fun questions left?
No fun questions. I got one more question.
Go ahead back to your other question.
Okay, back to my other question.
I would go donkey story, but would that be the patches that we ate?
No, he has way worse than that. I'm pretty sure.
Go with that.
You got worse.
Yeah, go with that.
With what?
So on one of our podcasts, we had our friend Christina, who was incredibly high on acid and then decided to abduct a donkey and then walk it to a gas. She left her dog
in place of the donkey.
Of the donkey, took the donkey, went to the gas station, and then brought the donkey home and took her dog. And totally just an insane.
That's a crazy example. Another example is like, you know, David used to shit in golf holes.
Dude.
Right?
Why? Every time.
Yeah. Every time. It's going
to
be
living in the past, man. I've moved on.
Like, you know, he used to shit in golf holes to like get back at the man, right?
That sounds like a very Dave thing to do.
Thank you.
So he peed in mailboxes too, right?
I did pee in mailboxes too. Yeah. That's terrible.
So, like, what's your donkey story where you're, like, trying to...
Just insanity. You know,
like, it's just a weird story.
I think the clonidine patch, dude.
Is that the clonidine? Okay.
Dude, eating a clonidine patch is pretty up there, dude.
It's pretty ridiculous. I'm not going to lie.
That's very insane.
Yeah. I'd have to think about it. The reason why is it's been a long time since I've, like, reflected back on that kind of stuff, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't really... romanticize with it a lot.
I'll give you one.
Okay.
I was 18. I was at the Copycat building in Station North, and I was with a bunch of my stoner like friends. You know, they're all in high school. I'm the only one out of high school. And we're at the Copycat, which is all these art kits, right? And we're, you know, I'm buying Coke. They're just smoking bongs. I remember seeing this person come in because they were coming to buy Coke from like some gay club in Mount Vernon. And one of the people came in as a woman and then went into the bathroom and came out as a dude. And I just remember one of my friends who's like this dude, like the stoner guy, like where he got so stoned he could barely talk. And he's just like, whoa.
That would flip me out.
And in
the situation, you're like, wait, did...
Just what? His facial expression of like, what? Whoa, wait. And I was like, yeah, that's a dude, you know? Like, that's kind of like a donkey story. Just weird shit that has happened during your using, you know?
All right. No donkey story. The clonidine, is it?
I'm going to go with the clonidine, dude.
That's fair.
Like, I can't, unfortunately, I just can't think of one right now.
We don't all shit in golf holes, man.
We're not all on David's level.
Or piss in mailboxes.
Or steal the entire axle off of a car.
I needed wheels, man.
You stole an axle?
Yes. So we.
Why?
So why? Okay.
Did you put it on a new car?
I had a Dodge Durango at the time, and like I was serving papers as. Whatever it was called, I can't remember.
Your ridiculous processor job. Yeah,
and I staked out this really nice Dodge Durango, and it had these mudslingers on them that are really expensive tires. And so he was like, "Dude, we'll come back tonight and get them." I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" So he's like, "We'll come back and get them." So I was like, "Okay." So we come back with cinder blocks and an acetylene torch, and we put it up on cinder blocks, and he literally just cuts it off at the fucking axle, just cuts the whole thing right off. So we're in and out of there with like the whole hub, everything, threw it in the back of my Durango. And it was in their driveway in like Clarksville. It's so in a really rich neighborhood. So this guy came out of his house to his nice like $2,500 tires that are no longer there and probably totaled his fucking Durango because I wanted tires.
I forgot that you got to play dress up for a few years. Yeah.
It's not like that. It's totally, it's not like that. That's
how. That's literally how you describe that job.
No, it is not.
As being a processor, you said you just got to play dress up for like years.
I have literally never said that.
Yes, you have.
That is false. Anyway, moving on. Final question. So one of your favorite things I said, or one of the favorite things you said was when opportunity meets desire.
Mm.
And you said that about addiction.
I did.
Yeah. So how have you applied that in recovery?
I guess with the situation I'm in right now, you know, like, I knew for a while that like I've been spiritually bankrupt and like, and I mean, in this very moment, like not 100% right now, it's better than what it was, but like, you know, not too far in the past. And it was the thing with the sponsor, dude, you know, basically I had been talking to this person and out of nowhere, I was just like, hey, you looking for a sponsee? And like right away he was like, yeah, dude, I am. And I'm like, all right, then let's do this. And it was just the opportunity that like I decided to seize. And like, I had this desire to do something different, right? Mm-hmm. I had realized that like I had been spiritually bankrupt. I've gone through like a terrible situation that like, you know, with Michaela being mm-hmm. born and all this. And like, I realized that like, I just stopped growing. You know, I wasn't doing anything that like I did when I got clean. Like I said, I was miserable in recovery.
Yeah.
And I had this desire to do something different. And I remember when I asked him and like hearing him talk about recovery. I mean, I feel like I've already shared about it a little bit. Hearing him talk about recovery, dude, just got me inspired and fired me up. And like, I was like, okay, this is what I need to do.
Yeah.
And then the desire continued that like, okay, I know that like the sponsor is like an awesome direction and everything, but I need to get back involved with step work. I need to start going to more meetings. You know, it just was like this phone call that turned into the sponsorship, and it wasn't even planned that way. It just like, that's just what it turned into. It was a higher power thing.
I don't know.
And then 2 weeks later, after getting him a sponsor, my whole life fell apart. So it was great.
Yeah.
You know, it was great.
That's crucial.
So.
All right. Well, you are officially off the hot seat, and we would like to thank you for joining us today.
Woo! Yay!
Yay!
One last quick minute talking to anybody out there who's listening, struggling, needs to hear a message of hope. What do you have to say to that person?
Don't give up. I mean, I know that's like one of those cliche things that we all might hate around here, but it's the truth. It's like, you know, I like the acronym for hope. Hold on, pain ends. You know what I mean? Like, it's not always going to be like this.
Yeah.
And I think for addicts, or at least for me, let me keep it on myself. Come on.
Yep.
You know? So I guess like, as long as you have breath in your body, there's hope out there that you can do something different. You know, don't ever give that up.
Absolutely. Fantastic. All right. Well, we'd like to thank you again for joining us today. And here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us again. Go to all of our social media outlets, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, like, share, subscribe. We are self-supporting and need help keeping the mics on. Please join our Patreon to become part of the home group. And you can check us out on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, everything. For more information about us, podcastrecovery.com. But most importantly, everybody out there,
stay safe and stay clean.
All right.